You're listening to an Irreverent Podcast.
For more unholy content from our friends, head to irreverent.fm.
Welcome, friends, to the Speaking in Church Podcast. I am Josie.
And I'm Spencer.
And today we are talking to a very special guest by the name of Ryan Jimenez, aka Josie's partner. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, how's it going?
Why are you asking me how it's going? We live together.
Yeah, but I've been gone all day, you know? Lots of stuff happens.
Well, I'm doing great, Ryan. Thanks for asking.
I'm glad to hear it, Spencer.
Oh my god. I'm trying to be careful. No, I'm not gonna be careful. This is my fucking podcast. I can do whatever I want. Spencer, today we're talking about the Mormons.
My fave.
I have an unhealthy obsession with the Mormons ever since I was a kid, and they used to come offer to mow my dad's lawn and he would get mad about it.
And for those of you that don't know, where I grew up is heavily Mormon populated, so I have lots of Mormon friends, both still in the Mormon church and ex-Mormon friends, and I love them all, and I love hearing about their lives and their theology. So
yeah, Ryan, I guess today we just first of all want to get a little overview of the way you grew up as a Mormon, you know, as much as you want to share. You know, what's a daily life of a little Mormon boy? Let us know.
I mean, thankfully it's all not that different, at least now. You know, Mormonism has had many different stages, and what Mormonism looks like now versus what it looked like 100 years ago is very different. And even what it looks like, you know, in California versus Utah versus, you know, other countries, all very different, very culturally influenced. But I was born into Mormonism. Both of my parents were Mormon. And I was, you know, fully raised like a good little Mormon boy.
LOL.
All the way up until, you know, I didn't officially leave the church, but I stopped attending when I was 17 or 18.
What does it mean to officially leave the church, Ryan, before you continue?
Well, that refers to the process where you formally ask for your records to be removed so they stop keeping tabs on you, and they can like officially like excommunicate you, I guess. So you'd have to be rebaptized into the church
if you decided to come back.
Yes.
Does that go into, I know Mormons really like genealogy, so is that kind of like what you said, your records, is that just like the record of you and your family history and who's connected to you then?
Well, they keep genealogy tabs on you either way. It's not related to that so much, but it's more related to like church records. So they keep a record of like where you live, try and send people out to see how you're doing, reconversion efforts, just kind of trying to keep you, because they have basically two statuses for members in their databases for each ward, which is kind of like the local church. And it basically lists, you know, who's in this area, are they active or are they inactive? And so I would technically be an inactive member.
I'm sorry. So you're saying that somewhere there's a little Mormon missionary looking for you and is going to knock on my door trying to convert you back.
Well, they tried to get my mom to give them our address, but she didn't give it to them.
That's right, Mom.
she knew better.
Mm-hmm.
So because for Mormons, it's also very personal, because if you're not baptized, you can't go into the highest tier of heaven. So, you know, by removing your membership records, you can't go to the highest tier of heaven anymore.
Right. That's cool. Sorry, we interrupted you with our incessant questioning. So you didn't officially pull your records. Continue.
Yeah. But I did stop attending church when I went to college, basically. And mostly just kind of a natural transition, because there was, you know, my parents were supporting me through college at this point, and things were kind of complicated. since my dad did leave the religion around this time. So it was a kind of complicated process, but.
Of leaving?
Of leaving, yes.
Oh, cool. So before we move on, tell us about Mormon school.
Which one?
The one before school.
The seminary school?
I don't know what it's called.
Yes, yes. Seminary.
Who doesn't love seminary?
What is it?
So the seminary you're referring to is this school setup where, depending on where you live, you basically take a class every weekday, and it's on, you know, whatever the current section of the Bible is for the year. So they divide the Bible, the Mormon Bibles, up into four sections, and you study one throughout each year of high school. And if you live in like Utah or some heavily Mormon place, this is actually like a class in your high school that you get credit for. But if you don't, then you have to wake up before school. So my school started at 7:30, so seminary would start at 6. So you'd have time to leave the church building to get to school. And it's terrible because so it's so early in the morning.
In my high school, the church building was literally across the street.
Yes.
So kids didn't have to get up as early because they had the leeway of it was literally a 2-minute walk like across the street. But I do remember like pulling into the parking lot and you would see basically just all of the Mormon kids walking across the street coming from seminary.
Yeah. And you get like the carpool like situations going to a mass exodus from seminary to school.
Yeah. Seminary for us ex-evangelicals is a little different. You're an adult. Great. Now I want to know what a week is like for you. You've touched upon like every weekday you wake up at 6 in the fucking morning to go to church before school. But what does your weekends look like? What does your schedule look like? Who are you?
So I mean it's pretty similar to a lot of like very heavy participation churches where you have, you know, you've got church on Sunday, but church isn't just a show up for 1 hour, go home, call it a day. You know, you've got stuff before church. A lot of times you have either like meetings or planning. Church used to be 3 hours long. I believe they shortened it to 2 or 2.5 hours in the last year or two. And then you have meetings after church. You have, you know, different groups that you're in. So you have, you know, the young women's group or the Relief Society, you have the primary for the children. So you're involved in whatever activities each of these organizations is also a part of. And then during the week, you'll have other activities. So there's like monthly activities. So like cleaning the church building is one of them. Or you have, you know, Boy Scouts, for instance, like you wanted to know about. I went to Boy Scouts, you know, once a week, every week, for like 3-4 hours. And then you'd have camping trips once or twice a month, all weekend. Well, not all weekend. You'd leave Friday so you could be back on time for church in Sunday morning because you can't be camping on the Sabbath. So you have, you know, I'd say probably 2 or 3 events during the week. So
Boy Scouts and Mormonism have been very intertwined in the past, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mormons were a huge source of Boy Scout funding for a long time.
What changed, Ryan?
Well, I mean, I think there was a split, and I'm not exactly sure where it originated from. But I think part of it was Boy Scouting was becoming less popular with Mormons. And there was some conflict with the Boy Scout organization and Mormonism because, you know, when you have someone who's a major source of your funding, they tend to control a lot of your policies. And, you know, that resulted in a lot of the policies for Boy Scouts being more lenient for Mormons, which was kind of a rub with non-Mormon troops. And
is that why you're an Eagle Scout? Because it was so easy for you as a Mormon?
I mean, I didn't have it super easy, but I've seen some people coast through And it's pretty embarrassing, honestly. Because, you know, if the whole leadership of your Boy Scout, like a troop, is Mormon, you know, they have pressure to kind of get you through there and kind of check the boxes. So
I just like telling people that you're an Eagle Scout because it's fucking funny.
But yeah, and so, but they did split a couple years ago, and when that split happened, they opened up to everyone to be more inclusive, because that was one of the big issues people had with the Boy Scouts, is, you know, obviously it being very exclusive towards more than half of the population.
Oh yeah. Spencer, I have a million questions, but I live with him, so why don't you?
what are your questions? One thing I'm thinking about now, which I didn't know about, I knew like in seminary you studied like the Book of Mormon. I didn't realize it was broken up into four sections, because as soon as you said that, I instantly thought of like, well, that's how the lectionary works. Like, that's how, I guess, like higher liturgy churches, not so much non-denominationals, but like the Methodist Church, I know, does it, the Nazarene Church, I'm pretty sure Presbyterians, they follow the lectionary. So every 4 years, they basically read the Bible through like scripture readings if you follow the lectionary daily. And so I thought that was really interesting. And going along with that, of just when I was growing up in Yuma, one thing that we talked a lot about, not like it wasn't like sermons were about Mormonism, but when we talked like with the youth pastor and in small groups, we would talk a lot about Mormonism, because it really was like most people we knew at school were Mormons. And when they would talk about like Mormon theology, because like I've said on an earlier podcast, like I was invited to Mormon dances and just Mormon activities, and
yeah, they love to get you with that. That's how they
yeah,
get you in.
And yeah, like I would talk to my friends that were Mormons, and we would believe so similarly that like for a long time I was like, yeah, like there's like nothing weird about it, it's whatever. And then as I got older, that's when I would kind of learn more things. And one thing that I wanted to bring up is when you're talking about heaven, it's referred to as like the celestial kingdom, correct? And there's like three levels of it.
Well, so the celestial kingdom is one level of heaven.
Oh, okay.
So basically the way they split it is there's like heaven, and that contains all three layers, the celestial, the telestial, and the terrestrial, from highest to lowest. Mm-hmm. Celestial is the one that everyone wants to get into. Okay. You know, the real heaven. And then the middle one's like pretty good, and the bottom one's basically like earth, so you know, mixed bag.
So one thing that if I understand correctly, even though I don't believe in the Book of Mormon, because I believe in Jesus and I believe in the Bible, that means I'll get into the lowest level of heaven. Is that correct?
So pretty much everyone gets into heaven.
Oh, how convenient.
Can I work my way up into the top tier?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of layers here. You can get in, but before you go into that, there's like an area you go where there's a bunch of missionaries after you die. And after you die, you can become a Mormon.
Oh, and like then you can get purgatory. Into the celestial heaven. Who gets the job of being a missionary in heaven?
I don't know. It's
how do you divvy that up? Hey, I know you died, but gotta keep doing kingdom's work, you know?
Well, I think it's like you're in heaven, then you go down to teach people during the day. It's like your job, you know? Because you love sharing the truth with people.
Okay, so who goes to hell?
Well, they don't use the word hell. It's called outer darkness. And it's the absence of everything.
How Jewish of them.
Yeah. And that's basically like Lucifer goes there. And like Hitler, well, actually not
the
even Hitler.
Safe answer. Oh, wow.
No, you have to know God. And by know God, they mean like you have to have seen God and like talked with him and understand him and know who he is and reject him.
So you have to die, see, like be face to face with God and be like, you don't exist.
Yeah, there's some like people who were like early on Mormons who rejected it that get thrown out there, but for the most part people don't go there.
That kind of reminds me of sort of Calvinism with like irresistible grace, or however they word it, I feel like that's what it almost feels like. Of it's supposed to be, well, yeah, everybody gets to heaven because once you get there and you meet God, it's going to be like irresistible, and you're like, yeah, I want to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
This all sounds so complicated. I just don't believe in hell. Everybody goes to heaven.
It's very complicated. Well, and you'll remember how I mentioned earlier, everyone has to be baptized to go to heaven.
Oh, this is the fight I had in high school with my... Ryan is not my first Mormon boyfriend.
Just the best one.
I had a boyfriend for 5 seconds in high school, was Mormon, and it was a secret because he was 15 and he wasn't allowed to date yet. Ooh. But anyways, so his brother and I got into this huge argument because this is where Ryan's probably leading, I am assuming, because he was like, you can save people by baptizing them after they die. And I was like, I don't think so. I don't think that. I thought baptism was supposed to be like a personal choice. He's like, no, everybody gets baptized.
You have the personal choice to accept it. If you don't accept it, that's on you.
Okay, so what were you saying? Sorry.
So you were going to say something, Spencer?
Well, so I was going to say my roommate, right before I got married, she is an ex-Mormon, and she explained to me baptism of the dead. Like, I had heard of it, but it was always kind of like, well, that's weird. And she kind of explained it to me, and that's kind of how it goes back to, like, the genealogy. She's like, yeah, so, like, I'd have my family genealogy, and if we knew my great uncle Bob wasn't baptized, then we would baptize the dead in honor of him. And I was like, what the heck?
And don't you guys have, like, don't the Mormons have these huge rituals where you get a list of people and you just get baptized for them?
I was working my way there.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
You're spoiling all the ends.
I'm sorry. I just, again, hashtag obsessed.
Yeah. Well, so like a big thing with the genealogy is, you know, to know who everyone is, because to baptize the dead, you have to know who everyone is. And so there's basically these databases full of all of the people who have and haven't been baptized, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years, everyone they can get their hands on, because they really do believe it's an important part of saving people's souls, you know? And so the baptizing the dead is one of the big, you know, tenets of Mormonism, because it relates to that whole heaven thing that I was talking about earlier. But another interesting thing about it is the amount of, I guess, children who get baptized for the dead, because normally they don't baptize adults in lieu of the dead. You have, you know, 12 to 15 year old children come and you baptize them in the name of the dead as a way to kind of bring them into familiarity with the whole temple structure. So it's on the lowest level of the temple. And as you go up the temple, you need more, more like spiritual authority, because the higher
secret handshakes.
Well, there's that, but you have to like have higher ordinances take place higher in the temple, because you're closer to the sky.
That's like getting sealed in the temple sort of thing.
Yeah, that happens near the top.
Gotcha.
Oh my God, the symbolism, the
masonry.
Blatant ripoff of masonry.
Yes.
So my one thing I've always wanted to do is, you know, before they bless the temple, you can take a tour of the temple. I've always wanted to do that. Have you ever done one of those, Ryan? Have you ever been to temples?
Well, I've been to temples, just not when they're unblessed.
Although Salt Lake City right now is getting renovated and is unblessed. So we should take a road trip.
I would love to go to Salt Lake City and see the temple. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It is so small, dude. It's dinky.
Yeah, they built it for tiny people.
It's so funny how short it is. Thinking of like people like Ryan. Ryan's dad is also like six.
Oh, you mean like the ceilings?
It's
are short?
Like short. Yeah, it's like a dinky little building.
Well, because they built it forever ago, and they built it out of stone that they carried out from the mountains. It took 40 years to build.
And let me tell you, if it was a person of color, it would have not taken that long.
Or they wouldn't have built it out of stone.
Well, I mean,
they
look
could
at
have.
The Aztecs, bitch. Our empire was amazing. Anyways,
it's like the pyramids are pretty cool.
Yeah. White people, you know, you can't. Anyways. This is a funny question for you. how do people excuse the con man that was Joseph Smith? Because historically, he was a con man and his whole family was full of con people.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. It's just people who don't understand.
And he was straight up like, I don't remember what I said before because the tablets aren't real. So let me just say it again, something different.
Well, he wasn't straight up like that. That's the inferred
thing. Well, anyways.
I mean, if you look at it, he didn't say he forgot them. He came up with a whole excuse.
Well, I know that, but seems a little thin.
You can't look at early church history with too close of a lens or it falls apart very quickly. You know, it's a big deal breaker for a lot of people.
I forgot my question, Spencer. So,
the only like big, besides like Joseph Smith, and then the angel Moroni, who are like some pivotal characters, people in these sort of stories, like growing up, like, I guess for us, like, you know, we hear about Jesus and Mary and Joseph and the disciples. So in like the Book of Mormon, who are like some pivotal people that you would be sort of like inspired by, like VeggieTale type stories get told about?
So real quick, just a quick like backtrack. I had mentioned that there were the four different years that you learned in seminary. Mm-hmm. And so basically the way that gets broken down is you get the New and the Old Testament. People here are familiar with that, I assume, at this point, if they've listened to this podcast. And then you have the Book of Mormon and you have the Doctrine and Covenants. So there's the Book of Mormon, which is basically the history of when, you know, Jesus died, he was resurrected, and then he went to America. And that's, you know, kind of the story in the Book of Mormon. And then the Doctrine and Covenants is basically this book that was written by Joseph Smith and like early church leaders on like, you know, how they were going through, you know, all of the drama that basically happened in the early church. And so in the Book of Mormon, there's all sorts of fun, you know, characters, all these random white people in America. So, you know, you have all the different books that people are named after, but like, you've got like Nephi and Lehi. There's like a story about how all of the, how people got over here, how they got these magic glowing stones and went in these basically like oversized barrels and traveled to the Americas, like just because God brought them there in these barrels.
Where geographically is this, like when you say the Americas?
They don't really get specific with it.
The United States of America.
I was like, are they like in Georgia, like Florida?
Well, they're
like,
definitely in New York.
Oh, really?
Definitely in New York.
But I think the Promised Land is in Missouri?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. Well, the Promised Land was technically a bunch of different places at different points when it was convenient.
Well, when they got run out of town multiple times.
The Promised Land was where they were going.
Well, the reason I ask about like, okay, like give me a specific geological location, well, like, or geographical, because when they talk about these like ancient civilizations and like the stuff that was there, like where are the ruins?
It does not hold up.
There's
dude.
No ruins. That's it's part not... of the issue. There's no like evidence for it.
Well, yeah. That's kind of like what I'm getting out of. Like when you talk about like, just like the easiest example, when you talk about like the temple in Jerusalem, like, yeah, it was destroyed, but there's ruins and they like, you know what I mean? And so that's where I'm like, okay, like how, like what do Mormons use as sort of like their like, here's some history and some context to back up the things that we're believing?
Well, I mean, the history and the context is the stuff that Joseph Smith found, which was things like golden plates from
tablets.
Native Americans found in Palmyra, New York, that don't stand up to carbon dating, or, you know, these Egyptian hieroglyphics he found and mistranslated, or stuff like that. There's not a lot of evidence. And I mean, the one thing people can always go to when there's not evidence is, well, God wants you to have faith.
I agree.
So,
faith in God, not faith in Joseph Smith.
A lot of blind faith.
Ooh, blind faith.
So kind of on like a lighter note of like, are there things that you learned in Mormonism that like, that you actually like enjoy, like sort of like good values, good morals that you think like, oh, I'm glad that I learned this as an adult, even if you don't necessarily follow the faith?
Oh, I mean, of course, it's like, you know, I mean, you guys talk a lot about very hardcore evangelicalism, and even though you don't necessarily agree with all of the tenets of what you were necessarily raised in, you know, you were still raised to, you know, be a good person, to help people who are suffering, especially like a lot of these programs where you're, you know, going around cleaning the church, going around doing projects and volunteering for people or checking in with people. There's building of community. You know, a lot of the structure and, you know, bits of it are kind of, in my opinion, you know, corrupted. But at the end of the day, it is a church with people who care about each other and are trying to be good people.
Yeah, I guess to our Mormon friends who may be listening, because you saw the word Mormon in the title, we love you and we think you're great. And I think you're funny. But I think that as long as you're a good person, who gives a fuck what you believe, right? Well, never mind.
Think you're right.
I take the back. Well, so I give a fuck.
One thing my youth pastor used to say is he's like, listen, when you're talking to your Mormon friends, just always land on the fact that, listen here, Mormon friend, if you're right and I'm wrong, I'm still going to go to heaven with you, so it's okay. But if I'm right and you're wrong, well, we should have a conversation about that. I was like, okay.
Very Pascalian of him.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that all kind of falls apart once you turn into little Josie who doesn't believe in hell. Then it's like, do what you want.
Well, and that I didn't realize that Mormons didn't believe in hell. Like, I didn't realize that Mormons were universalists to an extent. So I actually think that's pretty cool, Mormons.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
And I mean, you see, like, one of the big things that really draws people into Mormonism is how, like, nice and happy people are. And, you know, there is something to be said for a lot of that, you know, a lot of people just kind of trying to get along. That being said, there's some, you know, downsides.
Yeah, at least I could have the pressure to get married is a little intense.
Oh, I was literally about to say, I wish I could have a lot of kids.
Hey, but that's what you want. I mean, they have a whole churches set up for only single people. So yeah, they could hook up.
My sister-in-law's grandma is a Mormon, and she is single, an older lady. And so she goes to basically Mormon dances, but for old people to meet boyfriends. So
my mom did that for a long time.
And that's how she met her second husband.
Yeah, it works.
I mean, when you are in a room full of people that want to get married, I'm assuming that it would work.
Yeah.
And you all know that you believe the same thing and you want the same thing, so I feel like, yeah, that'd be a lot easier than freaking Tinder.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's really like nice for people who are Mormon is, you know, you don't necessarily have to know all of this stuff, all of the details, but as long as you just kind of believe, everyone believes the same thing pretty much. There's not room for dissonance in most areas in Mormonism. You know, there might be some difference in like how you personally reflect and see on things, but you know, the commandments are the commandments, you know, and it's a lot more rigid and laid out in Mormonism. So it, you
know, you guys have one guy, you got one boss, one top dog telling you what to do.
Well, yeah, but even like more past that, it's like, you know, you have very specific things like which are good to do and which are good to not do, and as long as you kind of don't do the bad things and you try and do the good things, you'll be fine. Like, you go to church,
you don't drink coffee,
when don't do drugs, don't coffee? Have premarital sex.
When is the first time you had coffee? Were you remember. Still a Mormon?
No.
Rebel. No. That's embarrassing.
Ryan, did you ever go to a root beer party? Be honest. Come on.
I never went to a root beer party. I don't know what that is.
Oh, well, I had this one friend in middle school, like her and her group of like Mormon girlfriends, they would have, basically her dad would make homemade root beer because, you know, they were allowed to drink that and not any other kind of soda. And yeah, they'd have like a root beer party in the back.
Oh, my
Mormons drink soda a lot.
We'll get to that in a second.
Sorry.
But back to the thing of root beer parties, because that's what I'm actually interested in here.
First of all, don't talk to me like that. Are you fucking kidding me right now? That's not what I'm interested in right now. Ryan has a podcast voice right now. Have you noticed that, Spencer? It's so funny.
I was going to say, this doesn't sound like the Ryan I talk to in person, but
being
okay.
Very sciencey, very clinical, and I don't appreciate it, but you could do what you want to.
So does that mean you're not interested in the root beer parties? That's what I'm hearing.
I'm interested in the root beer party, but you just were like, that's not what I'm interested in right now. Anyways, marital bickering.
So root beer parties. No, that reminds me, my dad and his siblings had this uncle who would make homemade root beer all the time. And so they'd like all go over and have root beer. But apparently
a root beer party.
Yeah. But apparently the root beer like actually fermented. So all the kids just ended up getting drunk.
Oh no.
Yes.
So that was just a quick tidbit I had on
party
root beer parties.
Wrong.
Worth it. I forgive you for speaking to me like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, well, you're talking about soda. Yeah.
Well, Mormons are big into substitutes too, because I mean, root beer is just a beer substitute. They've got all sorts of coffee substitutes that taste horrible.
They just drink Red Bull and
Red
Diet
Bull's a
Coke.
Mixed point.
My biggest thing was I always thought it was caffeine, because caffeine is a drug. So they can't have like I had friends that would drink Sprite and root beer or like ginger ale, like things that didn't have caffeine. But as soon as like my dad pulled out the Coke, they were like, no, thank you.
Oh my gosh, dude. So from what I've heard, it's that Joseph Smith's wife was really fucking tired of people drinking her coffee. So then she's like, no coffee. You can't drink coffee because you're Mormon.
Oh, so she just wanted it all for herself.
And also why they weren't allowed to smoke or drink tea. She just didn't want people doing that shit.
Well, that's the story. I think you're getting the story mixed up. That was the story for tobacco, which is tied into the same like vein of stuff. So
I'm assuming that she was just,
she was pissed because everyone was chewing tobacco in her attic and spitting it on the floor.
Ew.
And you know how nasty like the cut from, you know, disgusting. So she didn't want to clean up after all these men spitting on her attic floor.
So she's like, hey, Joseph Smith, tell him that this isn't allowed by the Lord.
Yeah. Listen, so, she was a smart lady, obviously.
I mean, it stuck.
she knew what she could get away with for sure.
Because
he was a there's many, many layers here.
So what you're telling me is the Book of Mormon was written by her.
Well, the really wild one, because the Book of Mormon's fine, but it's kind of like Bible fan fiction.
Yeah.
But if you want to really get something interesting, you should go through the Doctrine and Covenants. That's where the wild stuff is.
I already have enough covenants in my life and doctrines.
I'm on it. I'm on ex-Mormon TikTok, and so a lot of stuff about the covenants comes up, and I think it's fascinating. So,
oh yeah, but back to your thing on caffeine. So the general gist is caffeine's not necessarily bad, but you should avoid it and avoid it in excess for sure.
What about
coffee?
Because
the way it's written is you're not allowed to have hot drinks.
What?
Those are the literal words. And so
you can't have mulled wine.
Coffee and tea was how that was interpreted. And specifically like green and black tea, like the ones with the tea leaves.
Oh, so apple cider's cool.
Apple cider's cool. Herbal tea's cool. Caffeine, they said like it's fine. Just don't be like one of those people who drinks like a Red Bull every morning.
So why can't you drink alcohol? Just because
he just put that in there. And I mean, there's like lots of bits about like drunkenness and people looking down on it, so it's probably more complex than that. But there wasn't like anything that I was taught, at least, that was very specific to alcoholism or alcohol, and it was probably more related to like alcoholism and that taking over people's lives, because alcohol can be very destructive for some people, you know.
Yeah,
sure. So now tell us about the underwear.
One question about the alcohol then. So how do they reconcile sacrament?
There's no wine. It's water.
It's just, Oh, it's water? It's not even juice?
First of all, that's weird because in my church, nobody drank and people were very anti-alcohol, but we had grape juice at least.
No, is that like water. A water into wine metaphor?
Well, it's water. It's the blood of Christ either way, you know?
No, that's not. You're supposed to get as close to blood as possible.
Grape juice is not closer to blood.
It's closer to wine, which is closer to blood.
No, cranberry juice. It's red.
It's red. Red wine. Ugh. Anyways, tell us about the underwear. That's my biggest fascination is the undies.
Yeah, I mean, the underwear gets like a lot of traction. It's like more. So with men, you get it when you get the Melchizedek priesthood. Which is a whole different conversation.
Tell us what that means.
That's a whole different conversation. You basically get it when you're like 18, 19 and about to go on a mission.
Oh, so you get it beforehand. I thought you got it after.
No, you get, well, it's like the same time you have it. Now you have to wear these.
I was like, don't you need that sort of like priesthood to go out and be a missionary?
Exactly.
I don't know, man.
You have to have authority.
Mm-hmm.
Also, before we move on to continue this underwear conversation, tell us about the suits that these little missionaries wear. Because I learned this and I thought it was fucking funny.
What about them? You got to...
The special suits.
Oh, you mean that's like the Utah thing. In Utah, there's this company that sells missionary suits. And so they're suits that are made to like... be super strong and you can just throw them in the washing machine and they don't wrinkle and they're stain resistant, so they can go through like anything.
Industrial suits.
Yeah.
Anyways,
are they at least somewhat fashionable? Because I might need to invest in one.
They look like suits.
They're like normal suits.
Okay,
they're
cool, like then I don't think that's a bad invention.
No, it's a great suit, you know. And
you just don't rip when you ride your little bike.
Yeah, they're bike safe. It's a great invention. There was a need there and they met it very well.
I just think it's funny.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Okay, undies. I'm very passionate about the undies.
Well, a large part of what they are is just like symbolism to kind of remind you of things and to keep you kind of tied in, because they function as like a continuous reminder of who you are. Because, you know, you have to buy them from one source. They don't just sell them at Target. And they're pretty expensive. And they're this weird, like, silky material that's
how
very
much are
sheer.
They?
They're expensive. I don't remember. They're pricey.
I think it depends on the kind of garment style you buy.
Oh, there's different styles.
Yeah, they have a few different styles.
I've only seen the pointy boob ones.
Yeah, you can find them on the internet. They have a online shipping now. They're very modern with it.
My, my friend that wears them described it to me as she... The way that she interprets them is you don't want anything unholy, like touching your skin, because you want to be as close to God as possible. And so like, that's why she wears the garments. And I was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah. Wear a bra under the garment?
No, she wears a bra over them.
Yeah, that's, I feel like normally you wear it under, but I haven't really checked.
Well, so I like straight up asked her and she said, it depends on personal choice and it depends on the outfit you're wearing. She said, because some outfits, if you wear, again, I think it goes into the garment style, because sometimes depending on the outfit you're wearing and the garment you're wearing, she's like, if you put the bra underneath, it just doesn't work out very well. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, because they're very like, you can look up pictures of them online. They're very loose fitting pieces of clothes, and they're really like unflattering to most of the population, and they basically are like a t-shirt and shorts. And I mean, a big part of what they do is function to kind of enforce the Mormon dress code, because you know, you can't wear anything that shows them, you're not supposed to show them, and so basically that helps keep that in line. And also, like, if you're ever like doing something, it's like a continual reminder that, you know, you have all of these moral convictions. And then there's some like, you know, Freemason Coventry in it. So there's like X's sewn on the nipples for some reason.
Yes, 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 yes.
I don't remember a lot of the details because I never had them, but.
I know one of my friends that went on a mission to, Europe. I'm pretty sure it was like Sweden or somewhere pretty cold, but she basically had some that are like the length of leggings, because it gets so cold in the winter. So she had some that went all the way down to her ankle because she had to wear them under her skirt, and she's like, anything I could wear to make it warmer, I was gonna do it.
Yeah, they sell like thermal ones and stuff. Normally they go like in the direction of like, you know, more utilitarian. So like if you need more functional underwear, they have that, but they don't have like cute ones.
Cute is a sin, Ryan.
Not between a husband and wife.
That's also not to get graphic or anything, but can you imagine just like getting down to business and just like taking off your clothes to these really unattractive undies? It's like, oh, or like if you want to say you have to wear your bra over the undies, you put on lingerie over the
undies. Well, you're not supposed to wear them when you're having sex. And I feel like that includes leading up to sex, right?
You just like change real quick.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to have them on all the time. Like you've seen Mormons swim and stuff before, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, obviously, Ryan, but I'm talking about like, well, and I want a quickie right now.
Okay. But I also, my friend also told me you don't have to wear them to the gym.
You don't.
Like sweat, swim, sex, shower.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot of places you don't have to wear them to, but I'm talking about like, I see you, I want you right now. It's not sexy. Anyways. Maybe it is. Well, I'm not a woman.
I think when you grow up with it, you don't know any different. So does it matter?
You're right. It's probably really sexy for them. I don't know.
It's not. Sorry. Mormons don't like it.
These are the things I think about friends. All right.
Yeah. But also like when it comes down to it, like what's more important, like having it right this second or God, you know, and shuts it down real quick. I know, Josie.
I think the Lord wants you to be blessed, you know.
Fruitful.
Well, it's especially weird, like knowing early Mormonism, it's not quite in line with that, but I'm not sure when garments came into play.
Oh my gosh. Well, Spencer, you got any more questions? We're gonna have to do another episode of these.
Yeah, I feel like this was a good just introductory, and there's other things that I know that would take a lot longer, so maybe we should rifle through questions and pick one or two that deserve the most attention.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have a quarterly Mormon talk with Ryan Jimenez.
Well, like I said, there's so many layers. Like all the time I'll just remember things and I'm like, oh, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
So many, a flash of trauma.
Oh, amen. Get those all the time. Well, Ryan, thanks for joining us. I'm not going to give people your social media because I don't need them stalking you.
And it's not that interesting.
And you're private, so.
I am private.
If you want to see him, follow Josie.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't post them that often. I got a life.
You post me more than I do.
That's true. Ryan also hasn't posted in literal months, but you can find him on my Instagram at Josie Takes the World. You can find Spencer at Spence R. Okay.
Spence Rose.
I always forget. There's one R. Spence Rose. One R. No Spencer. It's just Spence Rose. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You can find us on Instagram, our podcast at Speaking in Church. Where else, Spencer?
You can find us on Twitter at Speaking Church. You can find me on Twitter at Snowball_. And you can find Josie on Twitter at Josie Takes the.
No world, because Twitter sucks. I hope you enjoyed this episode, everybody. We did, because we love the Mormons. And Mormon friends, we really do love you. And yeah.
If any of our Mormon friends are listening and they'd like to come on, especially, I think, like, some of my friends, like, I hope you listen. If you are actively a member in the Mormon church, like, I would love to just talk about, like, modern day Mormonism. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, I would love to talk to you about theology, because, I mean, we obviously respect theology a whole lot here.
I would really love to talk about the sort of, like, universalism, because I honestly didn't know that about Mormons, and so I would love to talk about that.
Come talk to us, friends. Yeah, stay woke or get woke.
Jesus loves you.
Bye.
You didn't think I was going to let you get away with without giving you the good old modern plugs, right? The modern day plugs. Well, I mean, most stuff stays the same. Speaking at Church on Instagram, you can find everything there. Josie Takes the World personally. Don't bother Spencer, okay? Unless you already know her, then feel free to bother her and tell you I sent her. Whatever. Anyways, if you're feeling generous, buy some merch. That's on our Instagram. That's pretty much it for the modern day plugs. I'm going to say it again because in this season of Christian nonsense, get woke or stay woke. Stay woke or get woke. I don't even remember what order I usually say it in because Christmas puts me that out of whack. All right, whatever. Bye.
This has been an Irreverent Media podcast.